Well, so. Anyway, Krishna
is the reason for the season.
I just think if you're saying how merciful Krishna is, because we all know in our own lives how imperfect we are, and yet Krishna really is the Supreme Personality of Loving Parent. You think of the unconditional love of a good parent. You think of the unconditional love of a good parent, Krishna really is the Supreme Parent. He says that in Bhagavad Gita. Pitamamasya Jagato, I'm the father of this world. Mata, the mother. Tata, the creator. Pitama, the grandfather. Of course, everybody else. So, the cousin. So, Krishna, if you think about loving parents where they just, you know, the children do so many things and yet the parents are just steady in their love for their children. So in the same way, it's exactly how Krishna is with us. In fact, our ability to love, our ability to feel paternal or maternal love is actually because we're part of Krishna. I think I mentioned this before, but on the day that my father passed away in the year 2000, and of course it's... So that night I lay in bed, and I didn't just immediately fall asleep. I was thinking very deeply about it, and I had some realizations about it. So we actually had a very close family. I mean, we had a very close family. And so one realization I had is that when you first are born into the world, it's really your, let's say if you're in a normal family situation, it's actually your mother and father that sort of make the world real to you. It's your mother and father to bring you not only physically into the world, but just cognitively, they bring you into the world. They tell you the names of things. And it's actually by the affection of the mother and father that you actually feel the confidence and the ability just to explore the world. And so, when my father passed away, I felt like this, a certain connection to the material world had been broken. And, of course, for a transcendentalist, that's a positive, not a negative. In the sense, not my gratitude toward him, as someone that actually very sincerely did many things for my welfare, but just my sense that this is the real world. Because in the real world, relationships aren't broken in the real world. And so, the reason is painful or disturbing or confusing, whether it's a relationship between children and parents, parents and children, between, you know, people that, you know, I thought you said you loved me. No, that was just an old song on the radio. So, you know, whether it's, I mean, all these different kinds of relationships, we become confused or disturbed when they're broken, because actually we are eternal souls, and it's very bizarre because relationships aren't broken, bodies don't die. In our real life as eternal spirit soul, none of these things actually take place. And so there's a sense in which the material world is a kind of horror movie. Mm. And it's just sort of this bad movie, and we're stuck in the theater. And we have to keep watching over and over again until we realize, no, I don't think I want to watch this movie anymore. Mm-hmm. So the second realization I had, the first realization was, I don't know what order they came, but one realization was that just that day, one of my vital connections to the material world had kind of broken or severed. And another realization was that it was actually that I was very fortunate. I was born in a very loving family. I received, you know, a lot of affection from my parents. And I realized that ultimately that love or that affection really is coming from Krishna. And it's Krishna in the heart of a mother or father that inspires the parent to love their child. In other words, people don't automatically love children. exactly Krishna in the heart, inspiring the mother or the father with his own love. Actually, Krishna himself feels that love of the father or the mother. And in order to see that one of his soul, one of the souls are taken care of, he actually inspires that same love in the heart of the soul that's playing the part of the father or mother. But actually, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Pitanam Asya Jagato, I am the father of this world, Mata, the mother. Jata, the creator, Pitama, the grand, literally, the father great. We say grandfather, except you say father grand. Pitamaha. So, start of our show, Sri Krishna. Yeah, Krishna really is. And if you think about it, we are ingenious. All of us are extremely talented in finding an unlimited number of other things to think about Krishna. And there is no limit to our ingenuity and imagination and creativity in filling our days with other things. And but actually, back at the Vedic ranch, our real happiness really comes from thinking of Krishna. If you think about it, just who could be better friends than Gaur Nitai? Isn't it? I mean, they're just great, the greatest guys. Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda. So, and how often do we really think of them? And so all of us are so caught up in busyness, we all keep ourselves busy, that the thing that actually gives us most pleasure, because all of us have a taste for chanting. That's why we're still here. So, I mean, all of us, in our own way, understand that our greatest happiness comes when we really remember, seriously remember Gauri Thai, go to the temple and see them, or just chant their names. I mean, we all experience that many times. That's actually that's real satisfaction, that's real happiness. And yet during the day, we don't quite get around it. So, yeah, somehow or other, that's the whole material world is just a big virtual reality apparatus. And we get to try out different things, like, okay, try this, try that, try the other thing. I remember when I was a kid, my parents took me to Disneyland, what am I saying? I've never been to Disney World. I burned out at the Disney Corporation very young, but I did go to Disneyland, and ever since I was a kid, and then we went again, and then again I went to Disneyland, and then the coup de grace, tiro de gracia, was, grad night, high school grad night, we went to, did we? No, junior high grad night. Wasn't in high school? Anyway, some grad night. And I remember, I think I might have gone there in high school too, but I remember thinking, like, I think I've had enough of Disneyland. I mean, I don't, as a bona fide guru, I don't want to affect the corporate profits of the Disney Corporation by publicly putting down their theme parks. However, it is, it's like they have all these rides, and I went to, you've all been to Disney, right? Adventureland, Tomorrowland, Fantasyland. It's really just sort of profit land. And, went to all these different places, and Main Street, and this and that, and then at a certain age, I was just like, I think I've done Disneyland. And so the material world's like that. We have to come to the point where we just like, I don't think I need to go back to the Mahatattva theme park. I've been to all the lands. I've been to Swargaland and Bhumandala land and Naraka land. I've been to all these different places. I've tried all the rides. Okay, here's the princess ride. Here's the prince ride. Here's the like, you try, like, different rides, and then we have to come to that point where, I don't think I want to buy any more tickets. I try different rides, bend all the lands, and I want to go home. It's like that. vacations are famous for burning people out. And, of course, this process is greatly accelerated when you go with your family. So, isn't it? But that basically is. It's like you go on vacation somewhere, and everyone's all excited, and then you get there, and after a while, you actually want to go home, isn't it? Because enjoyment itself can be very tiring. Like when you do things and your purpose in doing them is to enjoy, it actually becomes pretty morose after a while because the quickest way to be unhappy is to try hard to be happy. And the quickest way to be happy is just try to make Krishna happy. Isn't it? I mean, just think about watering the root of the tree, there's really something to it. And so, when we try to please Krishna, we become very happy, and we try to make ourselves happy, we become gradually or quickly miserable. It just doesn't work. And you can just like, no, I get the hang of this, climb up the tree, keep squirting the twigs and the branches and the leaves. No, I know it'll work, but if I just keep watering the leaves, I know eventually the tree's gonna, no. So the same way we try to enjoy that watering root of the tree, Krishna. It just doesn't work. And you can remember that story we read? In that John Irvin story in the book? About the crazy guy. In the book I wrote, which hopefully I can write this synopsis for, there's something I call the metaphorist. M-E-T-A-P-H, like metaphor, P-H-O-R, the metaphorist. And the person representing Puranjani goes into this metaphorist What is the sign that says, a tree shall set you free? There's a sign, a tree shall set you free. And then it's like he discovers this, there's this one forest grove where this gardener with very sophisticated equipment, official uniform, is climbing up a tree, he's trying to water them. And so the character of Brunjan says, you can't water trees like that. So the gardener says, no, he said, that was just a traditional myth that you had to water the root of the tree, but now science has shown that's not true. So he's trying to water the root, leaves the tree, and then the tree crashes and falls over, it's dead. And so, it's a funny image, isn't it? That gardener, with all the sophisticated equipment up in the branches of the tree trying to water it. And then another thing he finds in the metaphorist is, he hears these children's cries. They're trapped, and he hears the wind rustling through the trees. He runs over, and he can't see anything. Then he looks down at the reflection. He sees the reflection of this pond, banyan tree, with children trapped inside the reflection. So, anyway, so in the book, I have these different images, and I guess we just have to keep beating our head against a wall until finally we stop beating our head against a wall. Because everyone's attempt to enjoy the material world, that's what it is. It's just, it obviously will fail. It has to fail. It's like you can water the branches of a tree forever. It just doesn't work. It doesn't matter how many times you do it. It doesn't matter how hard you try or how clever you are. It just doesn't work. And we keep trying, so anyway, eventually we become tired of being stupid. And, give reality a chance. And the reality is that we're actually part of Krishna. As he said, if we're part of Krishna, I can only be happy pleasing Krishna. That's just reality.
Yeah, even through Disney that I would suggest that it's a small book.
Disney.
Yeah. You Disney bit I was suggesting it is a small world after all.
Yeah, it's just
a world. It's a small world.
Just a cosmic theme park.
You have that crazy annoying guy.
Yeah, it's like, okay, let's do the reptile ride. You know, it's not Mr. Toad. Well, you literally go on Mr. Toad's wild ride. In the sense that you become a toad. It's interesting because it's a real theme park. You actually get a bird body, a reptile body. You actually, the ride, it's like you are the car on the ride. Another theme park analogy I've often given, I remember when I was a kid, we used to go to different, there was also one, which back then was really popular too, I think it still is, called Knott's Berry Farm, I don't know if you've heard of it. But out in California, it was like real famous, almost as famous as Disneyland. It was next to Disneyland, actually, Knott's Berry Farm. And sort of Wild West theme park, and they used to have these car rides where the car was on tracks at a fixed velocity, but the wheel would turn. So little kids, I still remember being a little kid, like turning the wheel and pressing on the gas and pressing on the brake. At a certain age, you realize nothing is happening. It's like, I turn the wheel and nothing happens, and I press on the gas and nothing happens, the brake and nothing happens. So, I mean, life is kind of like that. We're trying to do so many things, pressing on the gas, pressing on the brake, turning the wheel, but it's just the same old dumb material world. And so, after a while, we have to realize that it's just not, the very attempt to enjoy the world is the cause of our suffering. That's the irony. Our attempt to enjoy is actually the cause, and the only cause, of our suffering. Because sinful activities, I mean, offends. I mean, after all, the reason anyone does anything wrong is because they're trying to enjoy in different ways, whether it's offending someone by putting them down, it's like you push someone down, yet you're going up, or just trying to enjoy the body in different ways, exploiting other people, acting in irresponsible ways, like picking moose hunters for your vice presidential candidate. So, if you, actually all of our suffering is caused by our attempts to enjoy. That's the great irony of the material world. But if we just stopped trying to enjoy, we wouldn't suffer either. And just try to serve Krishna. So really, what is Krishna? Krishna describes the mode of ignorance, sarvartham viparitam stuff. Everything is backwards. Everything is backwards. Yes, and Krishna also says, Bhagavad Gita, that happiness which in the beginning is like poison. But the, like, for example, living in a place...
it starts out sweet and then it becomes...
the mode of goodness starts out with poison. Starts out sweet as mode of passion. The mode of goodness, like for example, let's say, I mean, like a real far-out scenario, probably would never happen to any of you, but imagine, by Krishna's arrangement, you had to serve in a place that was very humid and you sweat a lot. And people even call it a swamp. I mean, imagine. So, but Krishna does say in the Bhagavad Gita that happiness is the mode of goodness, in that it's yadagre vishamiva, that which in the beginning is like poison. Pariname mritopama. But at the end, actually what Krishna really, literally says is pariname, which means the way things eventually turn out is what it actually means. Because pari means around, Greek peri, like perimeter, periscope. So pari means around, and nama here, it's not the word for name, nama is just from the root nam, which means like namaha, namaste, which means literally to bow, or to curb, to bend, because the word namaha, which I offer my respectful obeisance, whatever, literally just means a bow. The English shape of a bow, like the English word bow, it's actually the same word bow, bow. You know, like a rainbow article. So to bow is literally to curve your body. In fact, sometimes in Spanish they translate me curvo, isn't it? I curve myself. So Therefore, nama, in this case, parinama literally means to curve around. And it's sort of like when things finally come around. So that's what it literally means, Krishna. So at the beginning, it's like poison, but when things come all the way around, literally, it's like nectar. And passion, of course, passion is exactly the opposite. Passion starts out like amrita. Hey, this is so cool. You know, it starts out like amrita, nectar, but then as things go around, it just turns into poison. And of course, we've often had that experience, and then you cry yourself to sleep, and, you know, wet your pillow, and all that good stuff. So, that's the point. Better just stay with the nectar program. And Maya tests us, because, okay, here's nectar, here's poison. The only problem is, poison is like what you're supposed to do, and the nectar is what you're not supposed to do. And, like, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know you're being tested. So the question is, will I act selfishly, fulfilling my material fantasies, or will I just stay fixed on Krishna, stay fixed on my duty, oblivious to the fact that I'm drowning in my own sweat? I'll just implore it right now for posterity. So, and that's really it. Like, will I bail out? It's almost like Krishna. I mean, imagine if you were taking a walk with Krishna. Imagine if Krishna personally came and took you by the hand and said, come with me and you can help me. But Krishna started walking through a place where he didn't like the weather. She just said, bye, Krishna. Let me know when you want to go to the Rockies. So, I mean, in a sense, that's what we're doing. Well, no one here is literally doing that because no one here is, as far as I know, near future going to Colorado, but point is, that's what it is. If we give up our authorized service because of some material inconvenience, obviously if something is really dangerous, or that's a different story, but if it's mere inconvenience, Krishna describes it actually in the verse which tells about renunciation, tyaga, in the mode of passion. And in the mode of passion, a person thinks dukkha mitiyevacha karma. And what is it? Kaya-klesha vayatya-jay. Sakritva-rajasam-tyaga-naiva-tyaga-phalam-vade. If a person gives up
his duty, thinking it's too much trouble.
Yeah, they're thinking literally dukkha. This is miserable. And by miserable doesn't mean like, you know, you'll be mutilated or decapitated or something like that. I mean, that's not what we're not talking about. Situations that are actually dangerous where you're really seriously in harm's way. That's not what Krishna's talking about. He says that when he says dukkha, that person is thinking this is miserable. Kaya klesha vayat. And so out of fear that there will be bodily inconvenience. Out of fear that there will be bodily inconvenience, a person gives up. The person would give up their duty. Krishna says, Sakritva Rajasam, to having performed renunciation of the mode of passion, Naiva Tyaga Phalam Labhe, they can never achieve the real fruit of renunciation. Because after all, why do you give something up? Because you don't like it. Why do you accept something? Because you like it. So what's the fruit of renunciation? Getting rid of something you don't like. Livrandu-se jumakoyis-kusina-vostan. Otherwise, you know, why would someone give... We give things up because we want to get rid of something we don't like. But Krishna said that won't happen. Because the peace you want, the idea that I can become peaceful or satisfied or enlivened by giving up my service to Krishna and then inventing some other service. Krishna says, no cigar. That won't actually happen. So it's really the verse which everyone except myself should strictly follow. And I'm just kidding. Yeah, all of us have to... yeah, we really... So really, the only... There's only one question that you have to answer correctly in order to be happy. And that is, what does Krishna want me to do? If you get that right, the rest is a piece of baby cake. The real point is, we just have to get that question right. And when we fall into this trap of thinking, where will I be happy? Will I be happy here? Will I be happy there? Do I want to do this? Do I want to do that? When we fall into that, you congratulate yourself, give yourself a big hug, because you've just fallen off the spiritual platform. And that is called the material mental platform. The material mental platform. What will make me happy? Where will I be happy? Rather than thinking, how can I please Krishna? Now, thinking how to please Krishna doesn't mean you should accept wild and artificial austerities. Because it's not Krishna's intention to torture you or that you take on a service which goes completely against your nature. I mean, it's not Krishna's plan. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that your duty, in fact he says it about 8 times, your duty is born of your nature. It is not sense gratification. It is not maya. It is not wrong. It's not wrong to serve Krishna according to your nature. So the idea that serving Krishna according to your nature is somehow self-indulgence is just a great idea coming from people that have not seriously read the Bhagavad Gita. But in the Gita, actually Krishna says over and over again that our service comes from our nature. Now, if you make your nature too specific, then you're becoming selfish. In other words, if I say, my nature is to serve Krishna in a beautiful place, I'd like to have sort of a majestic mountain skyline about 15 miles from the city I'm living in, and I'd like a flowing river, and I'd like a certain kind of architecture, and the weather, I'm flexible about weather as long as it's within a range of around, say, 12 degrees Fahrenheit. Within those 12 degrees, I'm flexible. And you can go on and on and on, you know, this is my dream dom. I want to serve Krishna, and I want to be exactly in this kind of situation. When Krishna says that your service comes from your nature, he's talking about general propensities. In other words, are you inclined to be a Brahmin or a Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Sudra? And even you can get a little more specific, like, you know, I want to be a writer, I want to be an artist, I want to manage, I want to do business, or I want to build things. I mean, there's, or I just want to preach to college students. I mean, I don't think, I wouldn't call that too specific. So within a reasonable boundary, you can say, yeah, that's my nature. But if you get too specific, you cross a line where my so-called nature is so specific and so detailed that you really spend your whole life thinking about how you can find your highly detailed, or how you can meet your highly detailed service specifications and make yourself happy. So the purpose of devotional service is to make yourself happy. So, and that really is the trap of maya. That's the trap of the material mental platform. We have to really stay... You know, when you're a young devotee, you move into a Hare Krishna temple, and you're a Vedic gopher, you know, go for this, go for that. You are the bottom feeder in the prasadam chain. And people are just telling you, do this, do that. And when you're a young devotee like that, you're strong just by obeying, and the people over you never tire of reminding you that all you really have to do is obey. And don't speculate, and don't think, and don't imagine anything. Just basically do what I say. Believe what I preach. And that's all you need to do. And you can shut off all the other brain cells in your head. So, anyway... I mean, it's always balanced. We should be creative for Krishna. Like, for example, I think Krishna inspired me to do this writing project, but at the same time, I sort of embrace it, and I really love it. I really enjoy it. So I actually enjoy what I'm doing. It's not that to prove you're really sincere, you have to be miserable. Actually, Prabhupada said the opposite. He said, if you're unhappy in devotional service, you're doing something wrong. So it's not the International Society for Martyrdom or, you know, absolute self-denial. We actually affirm ourselves by serving Krishna according to our nature. Affirm ourselves. So, but it requires so really the only question that we really, or the central question, the question we have to get right is what will please Krishna? And we can't just assume that whatever is most austere and most self-denying is what Krishna wants. That itself is kind of a little weird. So it may turn out that what Krishna wants you to do is what you love to do. In fact, it will turn out that way if you just sort of hang in there with Krishna. Krishna may want to purify us, test us, and train us in different ways, but ultimately it is Krishna's intention to give you what you most love to do for Him. I mean, that's what Krishna will give you, that opportunity. In terms of personal relationships, in terms of the kind of service we do, it's actually Krishna's intention to make us happy. Like if you have children, isn't your intention just to make them happy? And even if you tell them, like, you shouldn't do this, or you should do that, the purpose is just to make them happy and to avoid problems. So that's all Krishna wants. Anyway, I'm voting for Krishna. Any questions?
Got a question.
Got a question. I specialize in that.
Why does it have to look like nectar if it's poison?
Why? Well, first of all, once we get our head screwed on properly, it doesn't look like nectar. It looks like nectar because it is a mode of passion. And if I was actually a little more sober and not DUI, driving under the influence of the modes. If I was more sober, like Krishna says, deer is tough to know you to, the deer is not bewildered. I would see, it's just like junk food. Junk food looks like nectar to some very bright people. Yeah, but if you get to a certain point in life, where you look at junk food and it's just like, looks disgusting. I actually have a nutrition.
But why does it have to look like poison if it's nectar though? I mean,
like, well, it doesn't really look like nectar. It just looks like that to someone who is slightly impaired. Their judgment is impaired. And even then, it's also Krishna. It's like, what happens if, let's say, a person gets married and they're in a good marriage, and then some really attractive person shows interest in the married person. What should they do? It's like, if it looks like nectar, if it quacks like nectar, it is nectar. No, it's not. And it's Krishna. I think Krishna has a natural right. I think it's reasonable that Krishna wants to see, okay, look, smart guy, I told you this is bad. Now it seems to look good. But I personally told you it's not good. Do you believe me? Do you trust me? I think Krishna has a right to find out if people trust him before he lets them into the supreme crash pad up in the sky. So, I mean, I want to know, I don't particularly, when I was young, it's kind of when you're young, it's, you know, you can kind of sleep anywhere and do anything, but as I get older, I'm actually a little concerned about who stays in my house. Like that, what their character is, and am I gonna get a wing nut in the next room? And so Krishna certainly has a right to test our character before he brings us into his own home. If I don't trust Krishna, Now, why don't we trust Krishna? Of course, you know, we may have very strong material desires. It may not just be a question of trusting Krishna. It's like you're driving a car at high speed. You realize you're going the wrong direction. You can't just slam on the brake unless you want to flip your car, do a little, throw a little amateur car show. But if you actually want to safely stop your car and turn around, you have to gradually stop it and take some time. So our material desires have some momentum. You may actually in your heart really desire to give yourself to Krishna. That may be your real intention. But because our material desires have a little bit of momentum, it takes a while to stop them. But you're praying to become free from your material desires. You're praying to become free from them. And in terms of serious plans you make for your life, those are about spiritual life in Krishna. So even though someone may have some remnants of bad habits or this or that, but they're not honoring that garbage by sort of making it, you know, philosophizing it into a legitimate life goal. We see some people who just basically can't control themselves and come up with all these bizarre philosophies which justify and even promote their weaknesses as virtues. So if your head and heart are in the right place, like you know what's right and wrong, and you're trying the best you can to come to the right point, even if we're imperfect in Krishna, but we're still really trying, and we accept the principle in our heart. Like Prabhupada says, someone who doesn't resent the principle of Krishna consciousness, then Krishna will protect you and save you if you're trying your best. Don't take nectar from strangers. I remember my mother, we used to go on Halloween. We used to use pillow bags. That's the way to go. Of course, it's kind of, it doesn't belong so much anymore in a lot of cities because, I don't know, you know, you get really great little things like candy bars with razor blades in them, or who knows what. I mean, who knows what some people do nowadays. But in the old days, like I lived in a nice neighborhood, we all go out. And actually, we couldn't get around to all the houses. There was something, it was really nice. We lived in a neighborhood in LA, it's called Beverlywood. That's where I was a smaller kid. It's just south of Beverly Hills, it's called Beverlywood. That's where I lived when I was Halloween age. So we were dressing up and sometimes a pirate. My mother would like, what would she do? She'd take some kind of cloth and tie it in like a little cape, and then she'd burn a cork, you know, and like put this black on our faces, and we'd, or sometimes we'd have like a stick, a little hobo bag on it or something. But anyway, so... and then, you know, of course, you'd buy those highly inflammable costumes also that we used to have back then that were like skeleton costumes and everything. And then we'd use pillowcases, right? Because they don't break. And it was really, it was kind of like kid's heaven because the neighborhood I lived in, you could just like go so many directions. It was just everyone had candy to give. Everybody was home and everyone had candy to give. And nice. I think I was fortunate. I had a fortunate child. Then we'd come home. My mother, she was definitely in charge. And when I came home, we had to dump out all our stuff and anything which wasn't sort of like, you know, commercial, you know, what, like sort of a known company or something, we had to dump. You know, there's all kinds of stuff. Candy. But we could only accept things, you know, that came from known companies and stuff like that. Yeah. So it's not like what looks like nectar. I mean, at a certain point, it's like, you know, you have a brain in your head. Do you want to use it? So it's like all of us. This week, for all of us, it's not that my mother said, oh, that looks like nectar, so why don't we just eat it anyway? Or she's going to eat it, or let me eat it. It's just, it wasn't like that. You know, people have principles. And actually, in terms of nectar, the real nectar is to live your life by principles. That's the real nectar. To have the right principles in your life and to live by those principles, that's the real nectar. Not just one night stands with cheap candy. So what time is it?
5 to 9.
Okay, it's the bewitching hour.